have 2 hours and 6 minutes of remaining drive time. There are no messages in your inbox. There are no messages in your inbox. There are no messages in your inbox.
Alright, this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Sus D. Haven't been, well, last week was Johnny Liberty. I had done that several months ago. So it's been a while since I've had a chance to rant. And of course, we've had a lot go on in the news. So, also got a new tape deck, so I digitized a tape from the 1999 conference to end corporate dominance, which preceded the battle in Seattle. Li Lu Li and Norman Solomon. So, yeah, I'm calling for a reset. Now, we need to go back to, I'm playing these tapes because I can't go to lectures anymore because I'm spending 14 hours a day on a truck. It's why I'm digitizing all my old lectures that I used to go to all the time. I used to go to a lecture about once a week and record them. So that's why, and they're still poignant to this day. 20 years later, we're still in the same boat. But we were winning right before 9/11, right before the Reichstag fire of 2001, we were winning. So we need to go back to that paradigm, that situation. And it looks like we're going to. They've announced the Poor People's Campaign, and in my opinion, Martin Luther King was right on. He advocated we need to stop spending money on the military and move it to a poor people, spend more money on poor people, and the multinational corporations is where that's gonna come from. So a lot of people are advocating this, and that's what we're gonna return to. It's Friday, I'm driving back into Eugene right now. A lot of campers on the road. So, a lot of accidents. People, it's not that they don't know how to drive, it's that they're on vacation and they've never been to these places. So, just now I tried to pass a camper, but he sped up and won't let me pass, so that's okay, because I'm going to do this, doing this while I'm driving, so I got to be careful. So I can just slow down on the long straight stretch back in Eugene. Okay, so the immigrant issue has been a constant thing on NPR, and I've basically stopped listening to NPR except for Terry Gross and David Brancaccio and maybe the headlines, because they just go right up to it. People even call in and they cut them off. People even call in and go, isn't this immigration crisis caused by foreign direct investment in multinational corporations and the maquiladora system? And they cut them off right away. And, you know, we could legalize drugs too, would go a long way to help the situation in Central and South America, the reason we have a refugee crisis. But I support all these efforts because, hey, I want somebody to be around when they come for me. So I definitely support you, and we need to stop the immigration, the refugee crisis, the situation detaining people in prisons, because that's not the solution, and it'll force the powers that be, hopefully, ultimately, to find the true solution, which is to stop foreign direct investment, the IMF, and multinational corporations from raping and exploiting the third world, because that is what the problem is. And like I say, the Poor People's Campaign is ramping up and is starting to do that. So, let's see, what else? I'm working from an outline here. And an example of NPR, I listen to NPR all day, you know, I used to listen to it all day, now I only listen to parts of it while I'm driving, but I also, while I'm going to sleep, because I have to be up at 1 o'clock in the, 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning for my indentured servitude on a truck, I listen to The Daily at about 6 in the evening. We have, here in Eugene, we have The Daily, which is by New Yorker. And the other day, they did exactly that. They went right up to, they talked about the immigration crisis, and they went right up to, yeah, there's a problem in Central and South America. And then they stop right there, as if somebody's holding a gun to their head, like, okay, you can't say anymore. So, yeah, they just will not cross that line and say that it is multinational corporations, and not to mention legal the drug trade too, but much more the maquiladora system down in Central and South America, and the export economy that we've turned it into with the with foreign loans is what's causing the problems in South and Central America. So let's see. Tom Hartman the other day, the Supreme Court, we've lost Justice Kennedy, a major setback for the Supreme Court. But Tom Hartman was saying, and I get him sporadically because he's on a station, him and Amy Goodman are on a, you know, you can barely tune them in. You can always get religious programming and Hispanic programming for farm for the farm labor. Almost all across the country, I can get religious and farm labor programming, but it's very difficult to get Amy Goodman and Tom Hartman. So I get them sporadically, and Tom Hartman was saying that we can vote in laws. The Supreme Court is just to interpret the law. We can change the law, and our representatives can change the law. So that's what we need to be doing now is, and if nothing else, if these guys get too out of control, it's more reason to cause a revolution. I want to see a general strike. We need to have a general labor strike. It's ridiculous. And like I said, I'm bouncing around a little bit, but like I said, at the Battle of Seattle, environmentalists marched with labor, which gets me to Glenn Beck. I listen to Coast to Coast at night, so I tune my radio to the AM station at 1 o'clock in the morning, 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning when I start. So at the end of the day, I set it back there, and here's Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck's always on at the end of my shift. So I catch him, and I admit I only listen to him for 5 minutes at a time. I can only stand him, but right away I'm only listening to him for 5 minutes, and what he's saying is how the Democrats have come out. Recently, one of them won an election, and they're claiming that they're admitting that they're socialists. So right away, Glenn Beck says, "Well, so that means that the ownership, that the government will, that the people will own the factories." Which, first of all, that is not socialism. Socialism is when the government owns the factories, not when the people own the factories. So Glenn Beck is just always, the guy is just always, does not know what he's talking about. Anyway, so that was only 5 minutes of Glenn Beck, but I really would wish the left would stop scaring the crap out of the middle right by saying things like socialism. We want Keynesian economics. We want small-scale capitalism, and we want to get rid of multinational corporations.
A new message has arrived.
You can find people will, except for the extreme right, people will, there's people in the middle road and the middle class that we need to make all this work. You don't want to scare them off with talk about socialism. From each according to his ability and to each according to his need, that scares the bejesus out of people. And someday maybe we can do that, but stop saying you're socialist. I think you're making a big mistake doing that. Again, the Poor People's Campaign, in the spirit of Martin Luther King, Cornel West said the same thing. We need to be concentrating on multinational corporations and an end to the endless wars. And so tariffs, a word on those. I keep hearing on the stuff on the tariffs. They're not going to work. As an armchair economist, I'll tell you why they're not going to work. What happens is small businesses can't absorb these costs. The only businesses that can absorb the increase in costs are multinational corporations. And this is what the state does all the time. The state-sponsored corporatism that we have in America, this is what they do with their policies. And this is why you're always hearing the right say, stop telling us what to do. It's because the government does. We say, hey, can you stop dumping crap in our water and cutting down all the trees? And they come up with these ridiculous plans that we have no, we're not advocating. None of us are advocating this. I get in trouble with this one, but I may get in trouble with this one, but we're not really advocating a third bathroom either for trans people. Even they're not advocating for that. We just want people to treat people with respect. That's all we're asking for. We don't want giant regulations that affect the middle class and small businesses. And this is a classic Nazi tactic, by the way, a fascist tactic, is they pass these giant laws, the corporations just break them and take them to court, and then you and I and the middle and the small businesses are left with these, I don't want to use the word draconian, but they're oppressive laws that that run us out of business. So, it's just to consolidate the power of corporations. What we need is, like Keynes said, is you tax behavior that you want to stop. For instance, Walmart, where you won't pay people wages, I would put a huge tax on Walmart. We need to unionize Walmart. I'd like to see people just go in and loot the Walmart, but subsidize, use that money that you tax bad behavior and subsidize good behavior. Give people, if you want people to retool, I use the example of Freon when they changed the, they wanted air conditioning mechanics to stop using Freon. You tax people that use Freon and you give a break, you give money to companies that are switching and help them switch to the to the good behavior, to the good technology. It's called retooling. That's when the government, even in a capitalist society, that's when the government steps in, is when we need to retool. We find out something is very bad, like whale oil or oil, and we have a technology that can easily replace it. That's when the government steps in and taxes the technology that you want to replace and subsidizes the new technology. It's real simple stuff. Not socialist, by the way, either. Keynesian, not socialist. Unions, not socialist. We have a right to assembly in this country. The multinational corporations all have associations that they associate. We have a right to associate in this country. They are the ones that are the socialists, the multinational corporations. They are the socialists. So that's my rant, and you'll see Norman Solomon and Li Lu are saying very much the same things. Even back then, they're criticizing NPR. Oh, one more thing. I'm reading about the Spanish-American War. I didn't put that in my outline, so now I'm having memory issues in my old age, having a senior moment. The First of all, they're talking about Texaco. The fascists, Texaco, supported the Franco, and we never would have had World War II if the industrialists hadn't supported the fascists in the Spanish Civil War. So, yeah, there's been propaganda for a long time. All right, so like I say, Lee Lulee and Norman Solomon. Talk is cheap, tell your friends. Stop buying from multinational corporations if you can. What I'm working on now is, or what I'm starting to work on is, because I study sustainability, the tree up here, we have a lot of, the forest defenders are friends of mine, and I used to get arrested for the trees back in the day, and now you're a terrorist if you do that. But they have the FRC, or whatever, the sustainability ratings on wood are ridiculously, they're just not sustainable at all. First of all, international paper, we send stuff to China, which is totally unsustainable. China invented paper, they don't need us to send them paper. But, and it's because of low fuel costs that they're able to do that, and low labor costs in China. So, the other thing is, the forest management practices, first of all, global warming, whether you believe in global warming or not, you don't need, the trees are, won't need to be cutting down trees at the rate that we're going. 50% of global warming is caused by deforestation. So, the sustainability ratings of these companies, like Weyerhaeuser and the wood you're buying at Home Depot, needs to drastically change. The forest defenders want them to cut in half the amount of cutting that they do in the forest, and there's no reason anymore to do clear cuts. Wood should be very expensive to use. There's many, many materials that you can use for building houses. We should be recycling the lumber out of torn down houses much more than we are, although that's starting to pick up. So yeah, what I'm working on, I'm going to be playing you stuff from Conference End, from Corporate Dominance, for the next few weeks, but I'm also working on forest issues up here that you'll be hearing about. So again, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Lee Lulee, Norman Solomon. Remembered what it was I was gonna say. I do a lot of reading to put myself to sleep. I just read a book called The Red Virgin, which is Louise Michel was an anarchist she basically led the Paris Commune. I'm surprised more feminists don't talk about it. Louise Michel, Michael, or I don't know how you say her name, M-I-C-H-E-L. In her autobiography, a lot, and I'll be talking about that a lot, but in the future. But one of the things she did was she was arrested after she came out of prison. They arrested her for inciting a riot because what she did was there was a demonstration back then, a protest, because there was no food in Paris. So she led the people around, and she took a black flag, and or allegedly, she denied it in her trial, but they accused her of taking a black flag in front of each bakery, and she would put the black flag down, and the people would run in and loot the bread out of the bakery. They wouldn't destroy the bakery, supposedly. I guess some people did, but that wasn't the idea. The idea was to go in there and say, we need jobs and we're starving. We need bread or a job or something. And so they went in there and took the bread out of these bakeries. So it just gave me an idea. The next demonstration, and they'll probably come and arrest me, the FBI now, but I don't see why we don't just loot the Walmart, go in there, and in the next demonstration, a faction of the demonstration just walk off and go into the Walmart and peacefully just start taking stuff off the shelves. Don't destroy the Walmart, don't vandalize the Walmart, but just go in there with a mob of people and just start taking stuff and walk out. What, you think the minimum wage security guard is going to stop you? And I'll tell you, I used to work as a designer briefly for a security company, and the rumor was that the cameras in Walmart, they just pay for those domes and they don't put real cameras. They're too cheap to put cameras in those domes. They're just fake. So, yeah, that's something I'd like to see. I can't organize it myself from my truck, but yeah, loot the Walmart. At least take a, I've advocated for a while now to take a crap in a plastic bag and just leave it on Walmart's parking lot. We need to unionize Walmart. Talk is cheap. Norman Solomon. Lilu Lee was directed a movie about the Black Panthers, too. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
Again this year. I imagine that next year you will replace me with someone else who will be equally desirous of speaking the truth. I first want to say two or three little things. First, if anyone is in the audience who is very PO'd at Nike to the point of creating an incident, perhaps sabotage, I would advise them not to. Because, as you know, Nike has no provocation outside. There is this Nike thing. I equate it with the Nazis, the Nootsies, and the Nikes. And they're doing their little thing outside, and it is quite a provocation for us. We have to be very careful not to be drawn into that. And whatever you want to do about Philip Knight in your own time, that's cool. But right here at this conference, we have to have our own agenda and carry that forward, which is to understand how we're going to defeat the corporate miasma of which Nike is part. I first of all want to thank our signer. I don't know her name, but she's done an extraordinary job. I'm saying this. I'm saying this because we, who are the temporarily able-bodied, must not discriminate against those who at this time are disabled. I also want to thank Students Community and the End Corporate Dominance Alliance. While I've been here listening to Norman, who's done an incredible job of explaining the corporate dominance of the media industry, I want to go a little bit into my own experience. I had worked with three networks at one point, the peer media, and I just stayed there long enough to learn whatever I had to learn, sort of pre-training, as I couldn't afford to, and I didn't want to go on through the collegiate structure in that matter. And I learned quite a bit over those years and tried to apply it. I learned that the media structure in this country is extremely duplicitous. It exists for those corporations that dominate our culture. And this goes back to the 1940s. I think they learned very well from Goebbels and other totalitarian entities how to produce propaganda, how to use communications, and how to mold public opinion. In fact, there's a book, Propaganda, Communications, and Public Opinion, which was written by Seymour Dyckman. I think you can find it if you look around Columbia University Press in 1944, I think. You might take a look at it. Anyway, while I've been sitting here, I've been trying to write a little something, and I hope you don't mind, I'm a little tired. I almost didn't make it because I had a death in the immediate family. I want to give a shout out to the spirit of Josephine Smith, who 40 years taught students history, but from a people's viewpoint, of the United States, and I think we should remember people who are in our midst, who are teachers, who are trying sprang even from within the educational shitstum, as Peter Tosh calls it, the shit stanchion, to fight the power. And they're from within the beast, and we have to give them their respect. They're working with nothing. I have some questions. Can we, through analyzing, synthesizing, distilling the human experience, not mistake or repeat the mistakes of the past? Presently, over a quarter of all human beings suffer from poverty, poor health care, unsanitary living conditions, and lack of a meaningful occupation. Given the size and severity of poverty worldwide, why is it that it continues at the present levels, despite the heroic work of human rights activists? The world as a whole spends on its military personnel, programs, research, and material in only 2 weeks what it would cost to meet the basic needs of the entire world's population of nearly 6 billion people in 1 year. If the governments of the world came together and decided to spend on the world's poor that equivalent money and effort, the same effort and money spent on the military budget globally for 2 weeks, there would be no more needy people left in the world, because the basic needs of food, clothing, shelter, healthcare, and literacy would be met. We have to ask these questions and tell people what's going on here. In the more immediate present, I just came back from Europe recently, and I was very amazed at the amount of coverage given to the war in Yugoslavia, not merely because those countries, NATO countries, are fighting that war, as is the United States, of course, pushing the name, pushing behind it, but they're much closer to Belgrade. They're only an hour and a half, 2 hours away, and they know that their story is going on continuously. But why in our media, why in this country, why globally, is no one asking why for 10 years, from 1989 through 99, why nothing was done for the Bosnians or the Kosovars? No one ever says that. They just ignored it for 3 years. Or we can go back to 84 or so. People knew after the Sarajevo Olympics that I was told personally by people I knew from Yugoslavia that there was going to be a huge ethnic cleansing. And not just what's happening in Yugoslavia with the Kosovars or the Bosnians. Well, what about Rwanda? What about Cambodia? What about Nigeria? What about Chiapas? Why are there no questions about this? Well, we must ask ourselves these questions, and we must tell others the answers. And the answers are, of course, the military-industrial complex. Military-industrial complex. Since the mid-1940s, this country's aggregate spending on the Cold War came out to $5.3 trillion. That's just this country alone. We're not talking about the former Soviet Union, or China, or England, or France, or any of these other countries that have nuclear programs. Then we have to ask ourselves questions. Why was the Chinese embassy hit? The CIA has a budget of $29.5 billion, but they couldn't afford to be on that. They couldn't even make a phone call to get the right address. It's one of those weird things, I guess. Just, things happen. We have this incredible GPS guidance system, and we can do everything, but you just can't get the right address, and we hit the wrong building. It's a terrible mistake. And we have this incident with Chinese spying. Yeah, that's interesting. Now, why does the media not ask the question, this guy, he's a spy, he's walking around free. What's going on there? And you look at a little thing in the New York Times, and he worked with the FBI along with his wife for 15 years, spying on Chinese. That's amazing. Maybe he's a patsy, maybe he's like Lee Harvey Oswald or something. Nobody asks these questions. But that's all right, because, the Chinese, they can't trust the Chinese. They're only a quarter of the world's population. They're dangerous. Maybe Chinese food, though. Hey, whatever. And we talk about the WADA, this warhead, which is going to—it's going to change the strategic balance of the world. It got 17,000 warheads here, and 600 the Chinese have. They're going to change the strategic balance of the world and create a nuclear war overnight. What about the 3,000 ex-Soviet nuclear scientists who are now living in China? Hey, they want to eat Chinese too, What's up with this? So, there's Chinese at every at MIT. There's lots of Chinese. Are they all spies? See, so we have to learn to ask these questions and ask the American public, as well as the public globally, to ask questions about how we're given information, how it's fed to us, spoon-fed, and how we're brainwashed. Now, I have a question. What will replace the former Soviet Empire? How about U.S. corporations? Maybe Mars bars? That'll work, yeah. People are hungry, give them a Mars bar. Kentucky Fried Chicken. Maybe the Russian Mafia, that'll work.
Sure.
Russian Mafia will be really good. And they can work with the American Mafia, and the American Mafia likes to work with the CIA and global control. What about the global nuclear threat we always hear about, and we have to defend against it, the theater missile defense? Let's have a ballistic shield. I have a better one. I've been thinking about this for a very long time. I think that nations of the world should get together, because we have this advanced technology, use advanced laser technology, and just cut the Earth in half across the equator. Take a little time. It could be a little dangerous, you know, but it could be done. Ronald Reagan would say, well, I'm sure that with the technology that we have, we could find a way to end all nuclear weapons in a future of war. We should cut the world in half across the equator and place a lazy Susan. What do you think about that, guys? Halfway in the world. Whoever fires the first missiles, and believe me, we will know because we have a whole network of satellites, will just turn the world 180 degrees, and those missiles will come right back on top of them, and we will then have a good nuclear threat. I propose that the next... What's with these people? But they have no problem dreaming up crazy things like they want to mine the moon. I want to know, once you mine the moon, and the moon is the size of a baseball, are we going to have problems on this planet? I mean, like maybe like massive tidal waves or things, or the Earth might stop spinning? No, that's in the future, so don't worry about it. Now, corporate dollars. You know, we have to create a society that no longer worships Nike, that no longer worships IBM, the Infernal Business Machine Corporation, that no longer worships Mr. Gates and Microsoft, you know. I guess that's where it's at with him, you know. He's Microsoft, so he's got to worry and control everything. You know, it's one of those things. And, you know, but, when you see the 350 billionaires around the world, Bill Gates and some of these other guys, their net worth is the total of the 45% of the bottom of humanity, so-called. Not that the bottom of humanity, they're the sufferers. They're the ones who have been pushed to the bottom, who have been crushed to the bottom. That's almost 3 billion people. Now, these 350 guys have the hubris, the gall, the unmitigated gall to say, well, you know, you have to understand. It is a society of the fittest. Well, what are you talking about? Guys are robber barons. And here we are at the end of the 20th century, and there are people who've now started worshiping the modern robber barons. Why is that? That's pretty deep, you know? Now, if we go a little further and we start to look back and listen to some of the savants or previous times who come upon Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi said, in this world, there is enough for everyone's need. Unfortunately, there is not enough for everyone's greed. This is what we should be dealing from. This is the paradigm that we should be dealing from. We can't all be greedy all the time. Now, maybe you want to, once in a while, you go, I need this, I need that, but hey, we can't run the world on that basis. We have to create a culture where big business does not predominate, because killing is a big, big business. And the business of killing is up. Wall Street originally, the stock market, where did they get that name? Well, they were selling cows, and they were selling people. You can go back in the New York Historical Society and look at the pictures where they actually were selling slaves on Wall Street. Well, nobody talks about it. I mean, this is something, and why did they put a wall up to keep out the Iroquois Nation? The first person murdered in New York was a Native American, a woman who went to take a pear off a tree like she'd been doing for 20 years, and a Dutch settler said, bang, kill her. That happened on Wall Street. So Wall Street, the whole concept of the wall itself and the street where they used to sell people, and this is a pretty bizarre concept, it's the killing floor. So it keeps going up and up and up whenever there's war, because it is a war economy that we live under. And I think this is pretty much true globally. The killing of indigenous people in the United States, 50 million or more indigenous people have been killed. And it goes back to even 100 years ago, you can go back 150 years ago, you can go back to the Hudson's Bay Company, corporation, you know. Well, where did they get these charters? The king has given you a charter, this is all your area. Well, what are the people living here? Where do they come up with this stuff? But they carry it into a modern context. We think of slavery as long existing. Of course slavery still exists. There are all kinds of sweatshops in Southern California even. They have in Guam, they have in Vietnam, and Philip Knight has a few of them. And these are basically slave institutions where people work for almost nothing. So someone said to me, Chinese are angry at us. You darn right the Chinese are angry at us because they're making everything that we're using in this country, and American corporations are paying them nothing, and then we turn around and tell them that they're our allies. Of course, we're allies, and they begin to believe this stuff, and then we take out their embassy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Only the United States has a right to project military power, so-called defense, whatever. Of course, military power is a euphemism for killing. That's what it is around the world. And we have to acknowledge that these companies that are engaged, like Raytheon, et cetera, they are basically killing companies. Northrop, Grumman, Boeing, there's a list of them. Just look at the paper. There's hundreds of them. And we have to ask colleges and universities to divest. We have to ask people to divest from these corporations until they either change their ways or they die. That's it. Too much from the dark side. Let's talk about radioactive colonialism. Yeah, there's another kind of colonialism here. Just take a little uranium from here, put it over there, then move it back when it's finished where you took it from. Everything is cool. Well, hey, they have the Shoshone, the Nevada test site. This is the Shoshone Nation. This was land which, the Shoshone were pushed here, and they ended up in a spot, and the United States government in 1868 had a treaty with the Shoshone as a foreign nation, because all the Native American so-called nations, all the Native peoples are foreign nations under United States law. So they said, you can have this area, you can have this area. Well, you can't have it. Exile in a land of free. Living in your own country, imagine that. And they're giving you a piece of it, so you can live in a bedroom, we're just taking the other 40 rooms. You can live in the garage, you can live by the washing machine or in the basement, or you can live out, better yet, just live in a teepee. See, that's what they're doing. So they have put people in places where their lives are in peril by creating nuclear test sites. They did it in the United States. They did it in Kazakhstan. There's a place in Siberia called Chelyabinsk, which is 200 times more radioactive than Chernobyl. And no one even knows about it. I saw a piece from British television. I couldn't believe it. It was not on the air in this country. The child's head was this big, like a medicine ball. And he's only like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is incredible. And then this is nothing. The person next door, her child has six toes. I'm like, wow. And then they have like little fish. And the people are putting the guy counter to the fish. And the fish, the thing goes off the scale. People are saying, well, the little kid says, there's an old saying, Russian saying, you can't infect the infected. And they go to eat the fish for dinner. I mean, the people living in such a horrible condition, it's almost a kind of an insane joke. It's Dr. Strangelove come to life. And no one talks about it, and it's not in the media. And we look at the colonialism in Africa. Well, how did the Mobutu, say to say the Mobutu, come to power? Because they were giving the uranium to the Belgians and giving the uranium to the United States. And they kept them in power for uranium and diamonds. So this is a kind of genocide which goes along with colonialism. And nowadays it's a kind of radioactive colonialism. Now, if we in this country are to end colonialism, we have to ask about these corporations. We have to ask about what's happening throughout the third world. We have to ask even about the people who are colonized in this country, which are poor people. All poor people of all different ethnic groups. And then especially people of color. Especially the ones who are disenfranchised the most would be, at this time, I would say, a people of Native American descent, so-called American. I call it United Snakes of American. I wouldn't want to call anybody American. I just say the people who are living in this country are Native people. They are the most colonized. And then would come the Latinos, then people of African descent. And we used to have a saying back in the old days, if you're white, you're right. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, step back. And I would say if you're red, you're dead. So, at a certain point, there was a reality of colonialism in this country, which is a caste system. We have to break that. The environmental movement, people who are activists against corporate dominance, must connect with these communities that are poor in Appalachia, that are poor in reservation, that are poor in the inner cities. Otherwise, this movement is not going to work that well. It may not work at all. We mustn't let them make us the enemies. We mustn't allow the fear media to put fear in the hearts of the American so-called people and turn them against this movement against corporate dominance. This is very serious. And find ways to link up
with people even in the labor movement. You can find honest ones, you know, you look out for the mafia style, but you know, look for the honest ones. There are a lot of people in the labor unions. I'm, for example, a member of a local 600 IATSE, the International Cinematographers Guild, and there are other progressive unions in this country, which are from the AFL-CIO, even though I don't necessarily like to use that terminology. And then there are people who belong to associations. There are journalist associations. There are other associations. There are teachers associations. Link up with these. Don't be so pushed to the outside where you can't affect any change from people who are inside. That's pretty deep. Now, I would like to propose something that this conference might want to talk about as something that might be a future thing. Not right now, but maybe 5 or 10, 15 years. Start talking about it now, thinking about it. There is no one in this country, myself included, who really is, except for Native people, indigenous to the country. Let's get real. People have come here as slaves. People have come here as indentured servants. People have come here as political exiles. People have come here as refugees. But the Native people, who were the people who really owned this country, were sidelined, were massacred, were discriminated against, until the point where they are just sidelined and eliminated. They become just a totem, or a Cleveland Indian. And this is ridiculous. So at that point, we have to ask ourselves, all right, we want to save the environment, we want to have corporate dominance. What are we saving the environment for? I would ask a better question. These national parks that Teddy Roosevelt, the great colonialist, the whole Panama reality, et cetera, and spreading colonialism, U.S. colonialism throughout the world, why did he create the national parks? He certainly didn't help it do it to help colonials, quote unquote. He didn't help it do it to help indigenous people. So you have these big areas, literally millions and millions and millions of acres, which are basically the environmental Disneylands for people to go visit. Now, I don't have any illusions or fantasies that the native tribal governments are not corrupt, because you can look and see the people who create a casino, that's a very bad sign. But the other side of it is there are many people within the native communities, native nations, who are progressive people, so quote unquote, who are looking to save the world, save the environment, people who came out of the American Indian movement, etc., a lot of elders. And if there is a point, a nexus that should be made, it should be a question of at some point supporting the handback of the national parks and BLM land to native elders, a group of elders who would then be overseers over that land. That land would not be stripped. No strip mining, no deforestation, no pumping out of the blood of the earth. But the question, just the question, of why are these trust lands of these so-called American people, really, which were stolen from the indigenous people, not at some point is there a question of handing these things back, not between anybody, and not in the environmental movement. It should be done. In Canada, in Australia. Australia is a very racist apartheid country, and even they are talking about giving back lands to the Aborigines, so why not in this country? This is something that should be dealt with at a certain time. 50 million Native people have died. You should ask the question. And then there's always this thing, I'm not going to apologize for slavery because I didn't own slaves. No one's going to apologize. Well, how about just doing something to help rebuild the poorer people, poorer places in the world, economically poorer, like the third world? How about Africa, maybe, to some extent, at least support people who might be progressive people in different governments in Africa, and try to create some kind of economic readjustment, but not like their kind of economic readjustment. I mean, really, from the grassroots, to try to fundamentally change the economic condition in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. I think this is what Commonwealth Marcos is talking about. This is very serious. We'll have to talk about this at some point. Now, of course, this would have a few problems for the current power structure. One, it would take a dismantling of the IMF and the World Bank. But I think that could be achieved. I understand that in Korea, there is a joke that IMF stands for I am finished. Now, with all this, there's something we haven't talked about. We must end discrimination against women. I hope that next year, there will be a real discussion, if not this year, about discrimination against women in this country, and maybe right here in this conference, I don't know if any has gone on, and chattel slavery. The chattel slavery of women throughout the world, in the sex slave industry and all these other industries where it's assumed in the craziness that they have in this country, people like Hustler magazine, I'm not defending the First Amendment, that guy is a pornographer. emperor. Let's get real. At a certain point, we have to talk about these things. We must end discrimination against women. This is the 21st century. It is no longer acceptable, period. Then, Springfield, Columbine High School. We must stop criminalizing our children. We have chattel slavery, we have discrimination against women, and we criminalize our children. Oh, what an enlightened society. Now, of course there are people who have problems among the youth. And who wouldn't, living in a crazy society, it's schizophrenic. You see, the parents are going, well, this, you know, I don't want to be like mom and dad, naturally. And then go have two or three Big Macs with bioengineered food and a nice sugar fizzy drink and get home and get PO'd, go on the internet, look up how to make bombs. I think I will kill somebody today. We must stop criminalizing our children. However that has to happen, we have to stop that as a society. We have to discuss this at some point among ourselves. Find ways to nurture activism, human activism, humanist activism among the youth. We must reach them, because if we don't, I can assure you the far right wing will. I see where the shooting at Columbine High School was on the anniversary of Hitler's birthday. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very deep. You know, no one says it in this country, but hey, it was Hitler's birthday. I'm not going to forget that. We must then try to also talk about evolving a new, non-paternalist culture, which is non-ego-centered and more balanced. Now, of course, the environment. Very simple. We must save the biosphere, or the world will simply cease to exist, and in a very, very few generations. I think that speaks for itself. And of course, you know, that's it. How can we create a new business dynamic that will stop these corporations from raping and pillaging the biosphere? Someone said paper cups. 1 million paper cups a day are used in Seattle. I couldn't believe it. It blew my mind. And then, how do we get the people on our side? Well, I think we're going to have, at first and continually, mass demonstrations. We're going to have to create demonstrations nationwide continually that are so massive that they will not be able to ignore the fact that something could happen. They might not be reported. There was recently a nationwide day for Lumia. I think like 1 million people nationwide, and they got like 30-something seconds on CNN. It's a joke. So CNN is continuous nothing news. I remember back when the Vietnam moratoriums were going on in Washington, D.C., back in the 60s. I'm sure some of you do, too. There, 300,000 people, 400,000 people. It was pretty hard for them to ignore that. We have to create these massive demonstrations once again. And I say that because then we will have a mass movement. It's about people, it's about non-violent, political, social action, which will change the psychodynamic of the society. Now, I don't think that some of you know this. Maybe some of you do know this. I hope that some of you will know this after this conference. Richard Nixon had a plan to end the war in Vietnam. End the war in Vietnam. Well, no. Say one thing, we are going to end the war in Vietnam, get off the peaceful war. And he did have a plan. His plan was to drop a nuclear weapon over North Vietnam. And he had planned to do this in November of 1970. And it was serious. I mean, this is crazy. This is how megalomania, the craziness of power. But there were, unfortunately for him, and fortunately for us and the rest of the world, there were some very massive demonstrations that occurred in Washington that fall. They kept looking out his window. We're all in there, they're walking out there in the streets, and they could be walking in here. So he changed his ideas, and he didn't drop that weapon. They also had an idea to have a backpack nuclear weapon. And this is a crazy idea from 1966, where they developed a nuclear device, put it in a backpack, and the idea was to have some LERPs or Green Beret take this into North Vietnam and detonate it. But then someone, I think, at the Pentagon said, well, what happens if he gets captured? North Vietnam will have bombed. Well, they changed that idea. So we have to realize that these guys are nuts. At a certain point around the world, we have these guys in power who look crazy. And they will stop the weapon. Just in the last 10 years, we saw Tiananmen Square. People turned out, you know, and whether or not we agree with motivations or how things are done, it was something which is very interesting. governments around the world, and they've done it here, they've done it in Sharpsville, South Africa, will stop at nothing to suppress popular dissent. People must create mass movements that will get rid of people from power, democratically, who decide that they are the end-all, be-all, they are the national command authority, and no one else counts. That is not democracy. That's the Pentagon, that's the KGB, that's the blah, 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 the et cetera, et cetera. We are the people. We have a right to have an influence upon world policy, because now in the age of nuclear so-called diplomacy, check that out, nuclear diplomacy, drop a bomb and your problem is solved. Oh, hey, they are ready to do it. They have their doomsday programs, they have command authorities, this one in Cheyenne Mountain, because I know there's quite a few in the Soviet Union. In fact, right now there's holes in the former Soviet missile defense, the Soviet Union no longer exists, and the CRS, and the current Russian Republic. There are holes in their defense system. And they're not really even sure at times if a launch is a satellite launch, which I don't necessarily agree with either, or a missile launch. So at that point, we are living always one hair breadth away from nuclear destruction. So we have to make people aware of this, and this is part of the same corporate paradigm, which is these same corporations, Hughes Aerospace, McDonnell Douglas, Boeing, et cetera, who are in the death business. How can we create a new mass media? Well, we do have the internet while still on, which was darkened at one time, so you know it's controlled. But we do have the ability with these and new over-the-horizon technologies, which will come on line soon. And I'm sure that many people are much more computer literate than they were years ago, to communicate with diverse communities on a global scale. And I hope that next year is a part of this conference. And finally, we must, as I've said a moment ago, create new paradigms that will unite the masses of the people of the world to create a new world. Not a new world disorder, a new world. A world where there's no more suffering, as we are used to, people starving to death, not being allowed into hospitals because they don't have the right insurance card, dying in the streets, or places where there are no hospitals, no doctors, where there's no running water, where there are no schools, where people have no clothes, where they have no shoes. And this is common day everywhere. And even within this country that people living like this. Why does this have to happen at the beginning of the 21st century? They call it a new millennium. New for whom? So this is really serious. We have to create within the people of the world, to unite with all the suffering people of the world, a new paradigm so we can change this fundamentally once and for all. And I think I've talked more than enough, so I will say one thing. I'll plagiarize and change Star Wars, because I don't believe in Star Wars. May the forest be with you.